But this morning, we have a special guest, someone from our own community. Some of you know Jenny. We've talked about Jenny Ford before. She's one of the newest members of our navigation team. But her husband, Jason, is going to be sharing with us, and he's going to share a bit about their story as a family. You guys know Miles, their little baby. And he's going to share their story of, you know, Miles and just how Scripture has been a part of that whole process for them and hopefully how that should impact us in our own lives. So let's give Jason a warm welcome this morning.
Hi, guys. So January 25th, 2011, I got up early and went into the office and did a bunch of paperwork that I'd been procrastinating on doing for a long time, then walked down to Progress, where I met with a graphic designer that was new to the community, trying to help them get connected into Austin. Went back into the office, caught up on my email, just generally had a productive day. Didn't really do very much, nothing really eventful happened in my life on January 25th, 2011, except I had a child. Of course, I didn't know it. I wouldn't be for another week until we would find out that a woman had given birth in Memphis, that she had decided to make a plan for adoption, and that the adoption agency would place this baby with us. And it actually wouldn't even be for a few days until we would have any idea that our lives had changed in such a dramatic way. So, you know, most people have like 9 months to get ready to have a kid. They have all these signs that like something's going to happen. There's like a growing belly and kicking and cravings. And, you know, we didn't have any of that. Like 1 minute we were just kind of going about our lives in Austin, going out for drinks, hanging out with friends. And then like the next minute, like boom, we're parents. It's crazy. So Gideon asked me to kind of share our story of adoption this morning. And I'm going to do that. And I also want to talk about just kind of the needs of orphans and adoption around the world and right here in Austin and in Texas. So not everyone is called to adopt, but my hope is that hearing our story might make it something that's a little more approachable for some of you that may have considered it. And I believe it's everyone's responsibility as human beings to take care of those who can't take care of themselves, especially for those who call themselves followers of Christ, that this is our responsibility as a community. So if we rewind a few months before our baby was born, Jenny and I filled out some paperwork, and that's what they call being paper pregnant in the adoption community. So yeah, you fill out the paperwork, and then you're waiting, and you don't know how long you're going to wait, and then all of a sudden, you're a parent. So the decision for us seemed pretty natural. I mean, we had been interested in adoption going back even before we were married. Once we were ready to start having kids, I think we had really developed a just compassion for kids that are in need. And we started thinking about things like we've got these two little poodles that sleep on a bed that's nicer than a lot of kids where they sleep around the world. And I guess we hadn't necessarily decided not to have biological kids, but we knew that we wanted to grow our family, and we knew that we were interested in doing it through adoption at some point, and so we decided to start with that. So we'd lived in Memphis when we were first married, and we had some friends who still live there and who had adopted through an agency in Memphis, so we decided to fill out our paperwork there. So this is actually Jenny taking the last little bit of paperwork to the post office to drop it off, and we were officially waiting. So I guess it was November, and it was it was after January 25th. It would have been the 27th, 2 days later, that we were having dinner with a friend in our living room, and I actually took a picture of it because it was kind of a momentous evening for us. So we're sitting having dinner. This guy's kind of like pouring his heart out to us, telling us all this stuff, and my phone rings, and I like picked it out and like started to answer it, and Jenny like kicks me under the table, and that's like her sign that I'm doing something that's not socially acceptable. I'm a little dense sometimes in social situations, so I showed her the phone. I was like, look, and it was a 901 area code, which is Memphis, And she just starts freaking out, and I'm like, my heart's all like jumping, you know, like, oh my gosh, it's our agency. So we told the guy we're sitting with, like, it's our agency, and put it on speakerphone, and our social worker answered the phone, and she was like, well, I have some baby news. And we were like, oh my gosh, like, we're like totally freaking out. And so she tells us that a little girl had been born that morning, and that they had been placed us with her to be her parents. And so we, like, our response was immediately like, oh my God, like, yes, 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 you know, like a stereotype of a girl getting asked to be married, you know, like, we're just like, yes, yes, like, wait, when do we need to be there? And so they needed us to be in Memphis the next day, like the next afternoon if we could. And it's a 12-hour drive to get to Memphis. So we stayed up all night, like, getting the car ready. Somebody had given us a car seat that was up in the attic, and we, like, tried to figure out how to install it, and loaded up the car, and then by 5:30 the next morning, I think I might have slept a little. I'm pretty sure Jenny didn't sleep at all. By 5:30 the next morning, we were on the road. And through the power of social media, we have this amazing map of our entire, all the tweets and check-ins along the way. let's see, 9:23 a.m., coffee number two in Greenville on the other side of Dallas. 11:45 a.m., I'm not proud of this, but we stopped at Taco Bueno on the Arkansas state line. And according to my Gowalla check-in, which doesn't even exist anymore, according to my Gowalla check-in, we made it to the hospital in Memphis at 5:14. So this was us, snapped a picture, crossing over the bridge, going over the Mississippi River into Memphis, and then got to the hospital. So we're like, they're in the, you know, in the, like, recovery room, I guess, the parents of this little girl, and we're like, this is us sitting in the lobby of the hospital, like, getting ready to go up and meet them. And we were told we weren't going to get to meet the little girl, but we'd get to meet the parents right then. And so we were, like, super, super nervous. I don't know if you can tell in this picture, but we were, like, really, really nervous. And it turns out the parents of this little girl were really nervous as well. And they were actually, this was a big surprise for us after the last, like, you know, almost 24 hours of running around, that they weren't sure if they were ready to do adoption. They were really young. They weren't sure if they were ready to parent, but they were obviously really attached to this little girl. They had named her Myla, and I mean, you could just see that they were, like, really enamored with her, but they just weren't sure if they could take care of her. So we actually left the hospital not knowing if this was going to be our little girl or not. Like, they said they wanted some time to think about it and to make up their mind. So this is Friday, Friday afternoon, and it wouldn't be until Tuesday that we heard anything else. So we're just hanging out in Memphis, you know, like, on edge. Like, we don't know if this is our little girl. You know, we don't, like, maybe we're parents. Maybe she's, like, right here in town, like, and we haven't met her yet. Maybe we're going to, like, drive back all the way to Austin with an empty car seat. Like, we have no idea, you know, what's going to happen next. So during that time, we stopped in at the National Civil Rights Museum, which is, if any of you are ever driving through or visiting Memphis, this is definitely worth visiting. It's the site where Martin Luther King Jr. was shot. They've transformed it into this amazing museum, kind of charting the civil rights movement, all the history of it. It's really incredible. So this was one of the things we tried to do to fill our time, but for the most part, we were just, like, nervous wrecks and just a mess in Memphis waiting. So Tuesday afternoon, we get a phone call from the agency again, and they had bad news. And they said that Myla's parents had decided that they wanted a parent, and that, you know, so we're, like, immediately, like, so we're, like, I guess we're driving back to Texas. But then in the next breath, they said that there was a little boy who had been born actually a week earlier. And because they were planning on pairing us up with Myla, this boy had been waiting. And now that we were available, they wanted to match us with him. And we could meet him in a couple hours. So we, like, I mean, just like an amazing emotional ride to go from thinking we have this little girl waiting, and then finding out, like, she's not ours, and now we have son, and he's here, and we can go meet him. I mean, it's just a mess. I'm a mess right now. So So we drove over. They were staying. There are families that will pick up babies from the hospital that are going to be adopted. So there's there was this family that was living out in the Memphis equivalent of like Cedar Park in this big mansion, and they had had Miles for the last week. They had kept him, picked him from the hospital and had him that week. So we drove over there, and we got there right at the same time that our social worker had got there. So she actually, I handed her my phone, and she recorded us walking in to meet him for the first time.
I was
going
to cry.
But she said she wasn't going to cry on the way
away. He's just staring at her like he knows this is his mom.
A week. No, a week ago.
Exactly.
When he was born today.
He's just staring at you. Look at that.
He's a cutie.
Oh,
isn't he?
Gosh, he is.
Yes, thank you so much for taking care of him.
Oh, we love him. We're
going to
miss him.
Hi.
Yeah. Sweet angel boy. Yeah.
He's so cute. We would love to.
So these are all pictures from that night. It was just an amazing night to get to meet him and hold him, and it was awesome. So the next morning, we'll stay here. So the next morning, we didn't get to take him that night, but the very next morning we were going to go to the adoption agency and like he's ours. We get to take him, and he's our son. So that night again, like not much sleeping going on. And the next morning, it's snowing. Like we go out and it's just the whole city is covered in snow, and we start this drive into the agency, but it's taking us forever to get there. And all night we had been trying to figure out what to name him. Like we had had some boy names picked out, but then we met him and none of them really seemed to be him. You know, like he's this little guy with this little personality, and we weren't sure we had the right name. And this is an important thing, what you name a guy. So so we're driving in the car and we still don't have a name, and the adoption agency's been calling us, like they need to print out some paperwork for us to sign and needed to have something on it. And we still didn't know. So Jenny pulled out her phone and was gonna call her sister, and accidentally opened up the Notes app on her phone. And while we had been at the Civil Rights Museum a few days earlier, she'd actually written down the names of some people that she wanted to read more about, because she wasn't really in a state to like be paying all that close of attention, and had written down a bunch of names that she was interested in. So keep in mind that at this time, when we went to the Civil Rights Museum, we thought we were getting a little girl. So none of these names were, you know, at least the boy names, none of them were intended to be potential names for a kid. But one of them she'd put a star next to, and it was Miles Horton. And so she just said it out loud. She was like, Miles Horton. And I was like, that's it. I love it. Like, that's his name. And I was like, where did it come from? Like, what happened? And I knew Horton was a family name. It was Jenny's mom's maiden name, and Jenny's mom had passed away when Jenny was in high school. So it had a family name in it, but I didn't know anything else about it. And she was like, I just wrote it down. He's like this really awesome guy from the Civil Rights Museum. I was like, what did he do? And she's like, I have no idea. And I was like, well, you've got to look him up on Wikipedia or something so we could figure out if the guy's like a decent guy or not. So from her phone, like I'm driving in the snow, and Jenny pulls out her phone and looks up this dude on Wikipedia. So there's Miles Horton. So he founded a school in the middle of the Civil Rights Movement to train people on peaceful protest. So he would bring people in, black and white, and train them on like how to sit in a diner and not fight back. Rosa Parks went through training with him, and she actually said he was the first white man that she trusted. So real influential kind of guy, kind of behind the scenes in the Civil Rights Movement, and we were like, this is perfect. So I called the adoption agency. There's Memphis in the snow. Called the adoption agency and said, like, good news is we're pulling into the parking lot. We finally made it through the snow, and we've got a name, and here it is. So Miles ended up being named kind of after three people. He was named after Miles Horton, the civil rights leader, and he was named after Jenny's mom and her family. And then Also, the little girl that we almost ended up adopting was named Myla. So it was only a couple letters off from Miles, so we kind of consider him being named after all three of them. So it took us 2 weeks to get back to Texas. You have to go through all this paperwork when you're doing cross-state lines adoption. So this is actually the house that we were staying in out in the country outside of Memphis. It was a friend of a friend that had this place, and it was just this beautiful time for us to get to know Miles and kind of get to be parents without, like, tons of people crowding around, and you know, it was just a really beautiful time for us. So we got back to Austin a couple weeks later, and there's his feet, and all our friends started coming up by the house, and friends and family that wanted to meet him. You know, we didn't have the experience of having, like, family in the delivery room with us, so it was a couple weeks later that everybody got to meet him. And the phrase that we kept hearing over and over again was, like, he is so blessed to have been adopted and to have you as parents. And he is such a lucky kid to have you guys as his parents. And I guess we just couldn't help but think that they had it backwards, that we were so blessed to have him in our family, that he was this gift from God to us, that our lives had been changed as much or more than his, you know, bringing him into our family. So, you know, it's I want to keep that perspective when thinking about adoption and orphan care, that this is a blessing for the parents, and it's a blessing for the people that get involved in these kids' lives. So with that said, I think it's easy to look at the situation that Miles came out of and imagine a different future for him. I mean, he was born from a mother who couldn't take care of him, who lived in a bad part of a city that's not one of the best cities in the U.S. for crime and racial tension. I mean, his life could have been very different. And where he likely would have ended up, knowing that his birth mother couldn't take care of him, is in our foster care system. So I want to take a second and kind of shift gears, I guess, into a more of an Al Gore-style Inconvenient Truth kind of documentary, stats and graphs and charts of just kind of looking at the orphan problem globally. The crisis here, you know, or the orphans here that are in our foster care system are part of a global crisis called the global orphan crisis, and it's a result of war, poverty, and AIDS, and just a lot of problems that have resulted in 150 million orphans in the world today. This is more than double the amount of children in the entire United States that are orphans globally. So this is, you know, a huge problem. These kids are, some of them are living in orphanages, some of them are living in group homes, some of them are living in the streets, in manholes or dumpsters. A lot of them are victims of sex trafficking, and international adoption is fantastic. And in fact, Jenny and I have our paperwork in to China, and have hopefully our second kid will be a little girl from China. But international adoption is not the solution to the global orphan crisis. The bigger issues of poverty and of addressing AIDS and providing education and opportunity to women so that they can raise their kids and have the means to do it. These are the ultimate solution to the problem, but it's going to take a long time, and there are a lot of organizations working on it. But it's a big problem, and it's not unattainable, but the solutions are complex and difficult. And I want to focus the rest of our time this morning on a problem that is a lot closer to home, where I think it's a lot easier for each one of us to play an immediate role in the solution and make a difference right now. So there are over 400,000 children in our foster care system here in the United States right now. These are kids who, for whatever reason, had to be removed from their birth parents or don't have parents who can take care of them. More than a fourth of these kids are waiting to be adopted. So these are not just kids that are temporarily in foster care while they're waiting for some legal battle or something to happen. These are kids that the foster system is actively looking for a home for these children. Of the ones that are waiting for adopted, more than half of them are legally free and clear. So these are kids who the parental rights of their birth parents have been terminated. That didn't come up on the screen. All right. I'm using my iPhone to control it, and apparently Trevor just tweeted something about me. That's funny. Where's Trevor? Thanks, man. more than half of these kids are legally free and clear. And I think a lot of people are worried, you know, if they were to start an adoption through the foster care system, that maybe the kid might be taken away. So these are 61,000 children who that's not an option for them. They have no parental rights from their birth parents. If we look just in Texas, there are 30,000 children here in our backyard that are in the foster care system, and of them, 13,000 are in that group that are waiting to be adopted. If you were to put them in the Irwin Center, they would almost completely fill the thing up. Not just the kids in the foster system, but the kids in Texas in the foster system that are waiting to be adopted, waiting to be placed in families. So if we break those people down, the people in the Irwin Center down a little more, a third of them are legally free and clear. So here in Texas, it's 8,700 that are waiting to be adopted and have no ties to their birth parents. And you would think that this would be a problem we could solve fairly quickly, but most of them, 60+% of them, wait over 2 years to be placed. Almost 15% of them wait more than 4 years to be placed, which is, in the life of a kid, is forever. You know, this is a kid who's 5 now waiting until they're 9 to be placed in a home. The possibly one of the worst stats out of this is for kids that are over 12 that are waiting to be adopted, more than half of them age out of the system. So I don't think a lot of people think about what happens when you turn 18 in the foster system, but you're essentially set free. They actually call it emancipation. You're set free to be an adult, and you've gone from having someone taking care of you, living in a home, to now being out on your own. And a 12-year-old up for adoption has more than a 50% chance of aging out of the system. So I've got, this is a very short clip of some folks who have aged out talking.
The world looks like a really big, open, scary place.
For one point, I didn't even think I was going to graduate high school. The idea of going to college definitely wasn't there.
Going into the foster care system is like being abandoned. You don't have support. No matter how many attorneys you have or how many social workers you have, nobody has your best interests really at heart.
Just imagine like being sheltered from the world and all until you're 18, and then you turn 18, you're emancipated, and then go free. Go ahead, do what, live. So, and living's not that easy.
So the stats of these kids that age out are unsurprisingly really, really sad. Of now young adults who have aged out of the foster system, more than a third of them drop out of high school, never get a high school degree. 75% of the young women are pregnant within 2 years of aging out, and their kids have double chances of ending up in the foster system themselves. 80% are arrested for a crime within a couple of years. 60% are convicted. Most of them do jail time. 25% are homeless within 2 years of aging out of the foster system. Only 6% or less than 6% get even a 2-year degree, even though there are national funding programs that pay 100% tuition for going to a state school. None of them are able to have the support around them to do that. Less than half are employed, and 24% deal drugs. And then this one blew my mind. 11% engage in prostitution coming out of the foster system. So this is terrible. I mean, this is a terrible, terrible situation. And, you know, we have a responsibility as a society for these kids. I mean, these are our children. I mean, we have as an organization, as a society, we've said we can take care of you better than the situation you're in right now. We've pulled them out of whatever home situation they're in. We've said, we can take care of you better than that. And we're doing a bad job at it. we're doing a really bad job at it. And as Christians, I think we have an even stronger responsibility to do something about this. I mean, there are 30,000 of these kids aging out of foster care nationally, 1,500 here in the U.S., here in Texas. And we have a responsibility to take care of these kids. So, I want to shift gears again, I guess, and just talk about our role as Christians in the family of God. We are all adopted by God. This is a word that's used kind of throughout the New Testament to talk about our relationship with God. I want to read from Romans 8. For all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself bears witness within our spirit that we are children of God, and if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we may also be glorified with him. So this word adoption is used throughout the New Testament, and I'm not sure I really understood passages like this. The whole idea of being children of God, I'm not sure I really understood that until we adopted Miles. Human adoption here on earth is this wonderful metaphor of the way that we've been adopted by God as believers. And with the exception of Adam and Jesus, we all have birth parents. We all have biological fathers, at least. And we might say that us as Christians might be less sons of God than Jesus, who actually had God as his biological father. Maybe adoption into God's family is some second rate, not quite as good as being a biological son. I can tell you from my experience that Miles is 100% my son. That there is no way that anyone could be more my son than he is. That when Jenny and I brought him back from Memphis, that our hearts could not tell the difference between adopted and biological. And I don't think it was until we had that experience that I really understood that being a child of God is real. I'm actually God's son. It's not some second-rate thing. I mean, this is a real thing, that we've been adopted into God's family. I think a lot of Christians think about the act that Jesus did on the cross for us, coming down and taking our place to pay for our sins. And we think about it through the lens of a theological word called justification, that we think about Christ taking our place, taking our punishment. And J.I. Packer says it like this. He says that the highest blessing of the gospel is not justification, it's adoption. So he says justification is a forensic idea, conceived in terms of law and viewing God as judge. Adoption is a family idea, conceived in terms of love and viewing God as father. In adoption, God takes us into his family and fellowship and establishes us as his children and heirs. Closeness, affection, and generosity are at the heart of the relationship. To be right with God the judge is a great thing, but to be loved and cared for by God the Father is greater. So this adoption thread it's not just in the New Testament. I mean, it's a thread through the story of God and his relationship with mankind going all the way back to the Old Testament and to Moses. If you guys remember a few weeks ago, Gid talked about the story of Joseph, and Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers for the amazing coat that he had and the affection of his father. And in slavery, he won the favor of the jailer and ended up in front of Pharaoh, right? So Joseph is now like an advisor to Pharaoh and helps him interpret this dream and helps him realize that there's going to be this big famine coming and that they need to store up grain so they don't have a famine in Egypt. And sure enough, there's this big food shortage, and Egypt has stored up grain, and now all of Joseph's brothers who sold him into slavery make the trek to Egypt looking for food. And then they realize, this is our brother, and we sold him into slavery. And amazingly, Joseph reconciles with them, and they move their whole family to Egypt. So, and these, if you think back to maybe Sunday school lessons, I mean, these 12 brothers end up being the 12 tribes of Israel, except they're not in Israel yet. They're in Egypt. And they're multiplying. They're doing really well and prospering and having lots of babies. And generations later, there's a new Pharaoh, and he's scared to death that the Hebrew people are going to take over and revolt and take over the country and essentially institutes racial slavery in Egypt and enslaves all of the Hebrew people in Egypt, has them building pyramids and doing who knows what. And he thinks it'll crush their spirit, that he's going to keep them under control by crushing their spirit, making them slaves, and it doesn't work. Hebrew people keep multiplying, keep doing really well and prospering. God keeps favoring them, and the Pharaoh steps up the atrocity, I guess, from slavery to genocide. He orders this unbelievable command that all of the Hebrew young boys are going to be thrown into the Nile River and die. He's going to drown all of the Hebrew boys. You know, if we can't crush their spirits through slavery, we'll just get rid of them. So I want us to read a passage. I'm going to put it up on the screen, and we're going to pick it up. We're going to pick up the story with Moses' mother, who's a Hebrew, and who, in order to try to save her son, decides to float him down the Nile in a basket. So this is going to be Exodus 2, 3 through 10, and if you could just read it to your neighbor out loud, and then we'll pick up the story when you're done. All right, so Moses is literally adopted into the Egyptian family that's been persecuting his people. And he's not only saved from being personally killed, but he ends up being the one who leads all of the Hebrew people to freedom, right? If you remember the stories of God calling him out with the burning bush, and then they part the Red Sea, they enter into the Promised Land. I mean, this is Moses is the one who does all of this, and the whole story started with adoption. So I want to, you know, we've talked about the global orphan crisis. We've talked about the theology of us being adopted into God's family. I want to take this passage with Moses being adopted and talk a little bit about our role and our responsibility to be a part of making a difference here. So Jenny and I, a couple years ago, had the benefit of hearing this guy, Robert Galinas, who's a pastor of a church in Denver, give a sermon on this passage. And he made an interesting observation. He said, you know, here you have this, we're in this terrible place in history, and we literally have babies being thrown in to a river, like dead babies floating in a river. And the daughter of this terrible pharaoh that's made these commands decides she's going to go take a bath in the Nile River with the dead babies. And he was like, you know, maybe she was thinking she can't really make a difference when it comes to slavery, and maybe she can't make a difference when it comes to these systemic issues in her society. And maybe she can't do anything to stop her dad from doing these things, but maybe if she goes down to the river, maybe if she wades in, maybe she can find one baby that she could make a difference with. Maybe she could find a baby in a basket and adopt him. And then he went on to talk about the foster system in America and how it's like a river of babies in baskets that are floating through the back of our churches and through the back of our society, and so many of them just float by and no one wades in and no one adopts them. And you know, it really struck a chord with me as a Christian, you know, that this is something that we all need to be a part of, that our churches need to be a part of. And, you know, in Psalm 68, it says that God is father of the fatherless. So these orphans and foster kids, these are God's children. And, you know, the Bible also says that we're supposed to be the hands and feet of Jesus here on earth. And it also says that the church is the bride of Christ. And if that's true, then we're these children's mother. And I don't know, those of you that are mothers, that you would want these statistics for these kids, for your kids. These are your kids. These are our children to take care of. And the same pastor in Denver said he looked up some numbers and he counted up how many churches there were in his city and then compared them to the number of children in the foster system that are waiting to be adopted in the state of Colorado. And there were more churches in Denver than there were children waiting to be adopted in the entire state of Colorado. So he got a handful of pastors together and he was like, we're going to adopt these kids. Like we need to change this. If one family from each of these churches in our city were to adopt a kid, there would be a line outside of the social worker's office waiting for kids that are coming into the foster system so they can be adopted, instead of a line of kids waiting 2, 3, 4, 5 years to be placed in a family. So I tried to look up the numbers for Texas, and trying to find the number of churches in Texas is almost impossible. Like everyone's just like, there's way too many. They're on every street corner. Lots and lots of churches. But I imagine the stats are pretty similar, just on a bigger scale. We're a bigger state, and we have a lot more kids that are waiting to be adopted. But these kids shouldn't have to wait 2 or 4 years. I mean, a 12-year-old who gets up for adoption in our state, that shouldn't be a 50% plus chance of being sentenced to aging out and going into life on their own with no one to fall back to, no one to move in with if they don't have a job, no one to spend Christmas or Thanksgiving with. That shouldn't be the case. So, you know, I said earlier that not everyone is called to adopt. I do believe that some of you are, that some of you might have your hands full with babies already, but maybe when they get into high school or college, you could go back and bring in a 12-year-old into your house. I mean, Jenny and I have definitely talked about doing that once we get Miles out, you know, under control a little bit. We're learning how to be parents still. But there are also plenty of opportunities to be involved in making a difference right here. You know, I believe the church can have a role in some of these systemic global issues of poverty and war and AIDS. And I think that the church can make a difference doing these things. But I think it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a while. I don't think it has to take so long to address the issue of our own orphans right here in our backyard. I think this is something that could be addressed within our generation if people would wake up and be aware of what's going on. So I think there are a lot of needs that can be met even outside of adoption, that just to have a friend, to have someone to spend a holiday with, to get you know, a gift from, to just get a word of encouragement from. There are a lot of opportunities to volunteer. So I want to actually throw a couple slides up of opportunities that are here in Austin that we can make a difference with. And actually, I wanted to invite Jenny up to help me talk through some of these, because she's actually been involved in a couple of these organizations. So do you want to talk to Helping Hands?
Sure. Helping Hands Children's Home is on 38th and a half Street in Guadalupe kind of area, really close to campus, and they need volunteers all the time. These are kids that have had severe abuse in their life, and so they're there getting therapy pretty much. I don't think they're even ready to go into foster homes at this point. So it's like a children's home. They need bedtime readers. It's an hour commitment a week. It's like from 8 until 9. They need people to play games with them after school. They have a playground and help with homework. You can call. It's really easy. They do a background check. You go to one training that I think is 2 hours on a weeknight, and then you're in. So it's a really great organization.
Another one is LifeWorks. Some of you may have seen they just built a big building on Pleasant Valley here on the east side. They have offices around Austin and work with just helping get people back up on their feet. And a lot of them are kids that have aged out of the foster system here in Austin. They actually have a need for tutors. They have a listing for one person that they're looking for to come in and help with IT stuff. Somebody just help get their computers in order and help them with some IT plan, I guess, that they had mapped out. And they also listed interest in college interns to come and intern with them. So if any of you are doing a degree in social work or just, you know, want this kind of an opportunity as an internship, I think it'd be a really fantastic opportunity. And then another organization that I think is relatively new is called this Chameleon Network. .org. And actually, one of our friends found this and just told Jenny about it this last week. And it's amazing. It's like a social network where you can actually look at profiles of young adults who have just aged out of the foster system. And they've listed on there what their goals are, what they're doing to try to accomplish those goals. And you can come in and just give them like an encouraging note. You can pray for them, but I think they have a lot of really tangible opportunities as well. They let them list a registry. A lot of them are going to college, or they're getting an apartment for the first time. And these are things where, like, if they had parents to take care of them, they'd take them to Costco or Walmart or IKEA and like get them a lamp and get them a backpack, and these kids don't have anyone to do that. So you can literally get on here, look at their registry, find a thing, and like buy it for them right then, and then leave them a note and be like, "I'm so glad you're pursuing a degree in graphic design. Like, I'm a graphic designer. I want to encourage you." Like, it's really amazing, and it's amazing to read these kids' stories. Like, half of the profiles I clicked on were kids that are going to college and want to be social workers to help other kids in the foster system, having come out of it. And then, do you want to talk to some of the other?
I don't know.
Well, so CASA is a court-appointed special advocate. So this is a program where you can actually go to court on behalf of kids in the foster system. You get to know them. You can be a character witness for them and be a help through that whole system. There's a thing called respite care, which is actually you go through the same training to be a foster parent, but rather than taking kids in permanently into your home, you're just on like a babysitter list for people that have taken in kids from foster care. So because of the way the legal system works, you can't just have any babysitter watch a foster child that hasn't been adopted yet. So you have to have somebody else that's also a qualified like foster parent. So they need people to go through the training just to be in that respite system.
And also a lot of foster parents aren't able to take vacations. And so sometimes you'll get to keep the kids for like a week or so while that family can take a vacation and just get a breather and a break.
And then, you know, I think a lot of people are worried that adoption is can be very expensive, and there are costs associated with it. One of the things that's really interesting is that the federal government, and they have to renew this every year, so we pray that they keep renewing it. But they will reimburse is it $11,000? $13,000 worth of expenses on your taxes. So there's a need to essentially loan people that are interested in adoption money that then when they file their taxes the next year, they get back in a tax return and could pay back a loan. So there are things, churches have set up interest-free loans that people give into like a fund. So that's something that we're actually kind of interested in. If there is an interest in adoption within our community here, figuring out creative ways to make the money available. And for domestic adoption, it would be very rare for the expenses to be more than what you would get reimbursed from that program. So that's something that, you know, if you're interested in adoption and you think like money is an issue, don't let that be an issue.
Yeah, we were poor whenever we got Miles. We had just spent all our money on our China adoption. We didn't have any savings. Jason had started a new business and somehow the funds became available. So don't let money be a hindrance.
Yeah. And then lastly, Jenny, I just want to invite you guys to our home. You know, we are very interested in sharing our experience and just helping people think through stuff. So you know, if you're interested in just helping out in the community, if you've considered adoption, we would love to have you over and talk about it. We may, maybe if there's enough people, we get a group together and have folks over one evening. So, yeah. All right. Well, yeah, Jenny's email address, jenny@jasonandjenny.net. Or you can just come find us. So I'm going to pray.